This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. You're listening to episode 286 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Fort Washington, Pennsylvania. Hello, Max. And it's that time of year again. Bookending the UAV Digest is Max and David's birthdays. That's why we get so along, where us Tauruses get along so well.
Happy birthday, David.
Happy birthday, Max.
Well, I'm getting ready to do some traveling. I may not be available next week.
Well, good, because, not good. I miss you, but I'm really happy that you're going traveling to the land of airplanes in Washington State. So I guess I'll bring back our executive producer, and maybe we'll do a couple of stories. And I know you have a story from Sun and Fun, so might be a little bit of a different show, but I think we'll be able to pull it off.
Sounds great, David.
But, you know, let's not go too far in the future. How about we do a show today?
I think we better.
So our first story is the UAS industry is purging hobbyist-grade components. Ballard launches hydrogen and fuel cells for the UAVs. You know, see what I did for you for your birthday? I found you a hydrogen fuel cell story.
I noticed that. Thank you.
Crowded park, crowded skies, Yellowstone. We'll talk this one into your grounded files. A feral pig problem? I'm just going to leave it there at that. OSU UAS team presents to White House officials. Italy to buy big drones to keep company alive, but the Air Force doesn't want them. A story about our favorite UAS. Are Piaggios. And last but not least, Northrop Grumman aims to outsource much of Firebird production. So let's get started. What do you think?
Let's get started, David.
So our first story comes from FlightGlobal.com. The UAV industry is purging hobbyist-grade components from supply chains. 15 years ago, practically all the drone components came from the hobbyist business. Now we've seen a switch to this. I thought this was a very interesting comment, Max, about the state of the industry.
The author of this piece is saying is that 15 years ago, we lived in a different world when it came to drones, unmanned aircraft, and so forth. There weren't many components available other than what was servicing the hobbyist business, either the RC airplanes or early hobby drones. And so commercial, even military applications used kind of cheap plastic parts that came from the hobbyist universe.
I don't know of anything else that has come from the hobbyist world into more commercialized. We have an industry now that has grown out of a hobby, but clearly it makes sense that this is the way it's going. I mean, you wonder where DJI is in the world of prosumer, and how much other low-end stuff is still going to be out there for the hobbyists.
I think the hobbyists are going to continue to have the, you know, low-cost kinds of components that we've seen in the past, but the commercial and military segments of the industry have caught up with the passage of time. They've developed components that are more suitable for those kinds of applications. We're seeing more and more professional grade UAVs with professional grade components. And I had a great example of this when I met with some folks from Embry-Riddle at Sun and Fun a few weeks ago and looked at some of the drone hardware that they were using. And we'll have that interview next week, I think. But sneak preview is that the machined components in this high-end drone didn't look anything at all like what you'd see in a hobbyist kinds of drone. I mean, these were right up to professional aerospace specs, and I think that's what we're going to continue to see up at that higher level. It's not a market that companies like DJI really play in to any great extent.
No, but it is good news that, in this current climate of aviation problems with things like angle of attack sensors, very simple items having quality failures, we don't really want to have that kind of lingering into our industry here with drones and UASs. There's enough things that can go wrong with drones and UASs, but component failures causing a drone to crash into a building or something like that is not something. So I'm glad to see that we're moving to more specific and more sturdy and more robust components, because we're now in a more robust product line. So talking about robust, this was from Canada's Wings magazine, and can't go by a fuel cell story without lobbing it over to the fuel cell master, Max. So take it away.
Yeah, this is, it's pretty simple. At the AUVSI Exponential Annual Conference and Expo held in Chicago just recently, Ballard Unmanned Systems launched a fuel cell product line they call FC Air, which I've got to believe stands for fuel cell air. And it really is a complete system. It includes a hydrogen fuel cell power system, hydrogen storage vessels and pressure regulators, and also refueling solutions and hydrogen gas supply. So it's kind of the whole package. They call this a complete long-duration fuel cell power solution, and it's really targeted towards, here again, commercial UAV manufacturers and operators. But they do see significant growth in this area. This is always a question, I think. The VP and General Manager of Ballard Unmanned Systems, that's Phil Robinson, he said that the company sees significant long-term market opportunities for zero-emission commercial drones. And now, get this, David, and ultimately vertical takeoff and landing vehicles and autonomous flying cars. So he's looking to a future where urban air mobility is powered by fuel cells.
Well, if we want to save the environment, electric flight is one of those ways to go. This is, fuel cells are going to be, one of those really nice added touches if they can make them work. The nice thing about the UAMs, the urban air mobilities, is you can put a bigger tank for the hydrogen in the aircraft, whereas on the smaller drones, you've got to get more power with less fuel. So what do you think, Max? You think that fuel cells are still your dream propulsion for your unmanned or your flying car?
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. Of course, we have to get a good hydrogen supply infrastructure in place. I mean, we have that for things like, power, like electricity to our homes and businesses and factories and so forth. We have fossil fuel infrastructure in place. It's not difficult to find gasoline or kerosene or diesel fuel or whatever, but we need to get to the same place when it comes to hydrogen availability, and I think we will.
Well, we talk about conservation, and this is from our executive producer, Heather, for Nature Conservation and Wildlife. Max, we've talked about Yellowstone before, and I thought Yellowstone was a no-fly zone, but evidently there's a lot of people not following that rule. And this is from CBS affiliate KBZK TV in Bozeman, Montana. Crowded park, crowded sky. Yellowstone looks to curtail illegal drone use. This was really a kind of upsetting. I thought we had minimized the drone use over the national parks.
They're finding that the prohibition on flying in the park is being ignored pretty frequently. Now, according to the report here, they have caught some folks and fined them for flying their drones in Yellowstone.
Yay!
Yeah, and it's sometimes not too difficult because people who, well, they fly their drones and then they post the videos in social media, and all it takes is for someone to see that and say, hey, that's in violation of flying prohibition over the park. Inform the park authorities, and they've actually prosecuted some folks after learning about their videos online.
You know, I guess your grounded is always going to be that way. We know, folks, that it's a beautiful place, and we know that drones take amazing footage, but sometimes you got to abide the law. And in this case, we're looking after the animals that are there. So do us all a favor. Don't fly there. And if you see somebody, report them, because that's what we need to do.
Yeah, some of these guys have been claiming ignorance, you know, that they didn't know that there was a prohibition against flying their drones there. But, you know, the park really does quite a few things to make it clear to visitors. There are signs that are posted at the entrances to the park. There is information that's posted on the park's website. And there's also a newspaper, a park newspaper that all the visitors receive when they come into the park. And there's information about not flying your drone in there as well. So, you know, in terms of awareness, I'm not sure what more the park can do. I'm kind of on your side. It's time to prosecute those who are caught doing this.
I never thought that I could use the word feral pig on this podcast. We have talked about so many things on this podcast, and this was just one more. Heather and I sort of found this simultaneously. Have a feral pig problem? There's a drone for that. And this was from foxbusiness.com. No comment there. So let's talk some pork, Max.
Yeah. Apparently, there's been a problem in Oklahoma with these feral pigs that are just really decimating crops at times. You get these pigs come in, and there have been cases where they have just torn through a farmer's field and eaten everything in a short period of time. And there's a statement in this article. It says that experts say, I don't know who the experts are, but there are experts, and they say that the total economic damage from these feral pigs can be as much as $2.5 billion annually. So that's a real, real big problem. Apparently, there's a lot of feral pigs running around. So what does that have to do with drones, or what do drones have to do with that? Well, David, your favorite
yeah,
program.
Yeah, you found it. Yep. We're talking about a pilot program with drones again, the IPP.
Right. The UAS Integration Pilot Program
is actually being used by the Oklahoma Choctaw Nation and its 11 counties as one of the 10 IPP sites. With 44,000 acres and a 27-mile-long field is available for testing drones. So they're going to start counting pigs, you know, and keeping track of these feral pigs and, I guess, eradicate them, Max?
Well, they also intend to catch them, and then, I don't know, do what with them, maybe relocate them or something. But one idea that they're testing is with automated traps to catch the feral pigs. And what they might do is rebait them with drones. I think that would be kind of an interesting thing to see. But using drones to rebait automated traps to catch these feral pigs. Other applications they're looking at too, counting cattle and some other things as well. So I remember when we were talking first about the IPP And there was a reference to indigenous peoples being involved in at least one of the sites. So this is great to see this story and learn more about what they're doing. But they do have some issues there. And these are issues that make what they want to do difficult. But at the same time, if these are issues that can be solved, I think that they have wider applicability. And they talk about a couple of different issues in this case.
Ironically, it was what we are, our congressmen, senators, and president were talking about this week, and that would be infrastructure. These areas have very basic infrastructure and need to have infrastructure built in. And one of those infrastructure things happens to be broadband, which is a serious aspect for a lot of parts of the country where they do not have broadband and high-speed internet, which seems kind of surprising, but there's a lot of rural areas in the center of the country that do not have high-speed internet. And how to integrate this technology into indigenous or native populations and bring in the technology. I mean, we've seen it happen in other parts of the globe, like we've talked about the Amazon jungles, etc. But here it's in the United States. We've got a Indian tribe, and they are trying to bring their technology up to a level so they can take advantage of this kind of technology, which would benefit them immensely.
And we have another indication of what's going on at the Choctaw Nation IPP. You mentioned the White House, David, that they're taking a look at what's going on here.
They are. Oklahoma State University has a U.S. team, and they presented to the White House officials. The Choctaw Nation Emerging Aviation Technology Conference in Durant on April 18th, the Oklahoma State University's unmanned aircraft systems teams conducted flight demonstrations. Attending the demonstrations was the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy Deputy Director. This is all part of, again, the IPP to show how that money is being used by basically non-federal employees, but for indigenous tribes.
The whole IPP concept comes from an executive order. So it would make sense that the White House representative would be attending this. I think it's great that they are involved because this is it's an important initiative.
They are acquiring information from the state and local and indigenous populations to be transferred to the FAA. It's how the money is being spent and how the technology is being transferred up to the federal level.
So the UAS program at Oklahoma State University is something that people might want to take a look at. This falls under the College of Engineering, Architecture, and Technology. And what they're trying to do there is through this program is give students experience with hands-on analysis, design, construction, and flight testing of UAS platforms. So OSU, Oklahoma State University, I think is one of the universities in the United States that is actively building a good program in the unmanned aviation sector.
On Airplane Geeks, we have loved an aircraft, the Piaggio P-109. And much to Max and I's delight, when Piaggio decided we can take that airplane and we can make it into a drone and a UAS, we got even more excited. And then the company went belly up, basically. And we recently reported that Piaggio was pretty much done. But wait, there's more to the story. Evidently, Italy does not want its aircraft company, a premier aircraft company, to disappear. So it looks like they are going to make the Italian Air Force purchase the Hammerhead or the P-1HH, optionally manned aircraft.
This comes from Defense News, Italy, to buy drones to keep company alive, but the Air Force doesn't want them. So yeah, the Italian government said they're going to buy 4 of the drones, even though the Air Force doesn't want them. But the Defense Ministry offers some explanations for why they're doing this. First, they say that this serves the operational needs of the Italian armed forces, which I guess the Italian armed forces dispute a little bit, but also it protects the strategic value of Piaggio. And also, the Defense Ministry says it strengthens Italy's credentials, essentially, as a partner in the Eurodrone drone program. And it wouldn't be the first time that a government has stepped in to provide some kind of support to a company that might otherwise go under for strategic reasons. And that's apparently what's happening here with Piaggio.
And of course, Piaggio has been around since the 20s in Italy. And Italy doesn't want to lose another defense contractor and a technology. They were a significant part of the Eurodrone program to create a system that all of the countries in Europe can work with as NATO allies, etc. So I'm not upset, you know. So they might buy another 4 after they bought these 4. I don't know how long that will keep Piaggio afloat, but maybe it'll give it time to restructure itself so that it can come out the other side, maybe not as an airframe manufacturer anymore, but maybe the technology leveraged will be able to provide them some sort of company going forward. And I would hate to see losing Piaggio as a name. The P-108 four-engine bomber was one of my favorite Italian bombers from World War II. So that company has been around a long time, and I'd hate to see it disappear. And besides, the Avante is a beautiful, amazing, sexy aircraft, and I'm sorry, but that's the way I feel about it. So,
so, but this also would give Piaggio some more time to try and find an industrial partner, somebody else who could come in with some investment money, presumably, and help support the company. And David, we should probably also mention that when we talk about the Eurodrone drone program, that's not MAIL. It's MALE, of course, medium altitude, long endurance. So just for the new folks who may not be familiar with that acronym.
You didn't want to hear about the Eurodrone runway? I mean, doesn't that project images of guys strutting down in new jeans? And
No, let's not go there. No.
Yeah. For those way back in the day, Bax and I were going to put a list together of acronyms, and we never got around to it. But two are the most important are HAL and MAIL, high altitude, long endurance, and medium altitude, long endurance. And high altitude would be something like a Global Hawk, and medium altitude would be something like a Predator or a Reaper, those kind of aircraft that have a long, over 15-hour endurance now at this point. So important terms to throw around. You might hear a lot. So, you know, we apologize that we never did what we threatened to do, but maybe we have an executive producer. We'll start putting that out onto the website. All right, let's talk about outsourcing Firebird production. And this is Northrop Grumman outsources much of Firebird production, and this is flightglobal.com. Why is outsourcing so important? The Firebird is a optionally manned aircraft that's either can be, like I said, optionally manned, meaning that manned or unmanned. Now, the manned version is slightly less than the unmanned version, but Northrop Grumman is using this aircraft as a technology transfer. We've talked a lot on Airplane Geeks about technology transfers. India is a really good country to, you know, when they purchase an aircraft, they want to purchase everything, meaning they want to be able to build them from scratch in their own country, and they want that technology transfer. In this case, Northrop Grumman is using this aircraft as technology transfers so that anybody who buys them as a manned aircraft, they can eventually teach the countries that are producing it to convert it to unmanned and to make a sophisticated medium altitude, long endurance drone.
And this is often seen in aviation, where in order to make a sale in a foreign country of an aircraft, the foreign country wants to have a piece of the pie. They want some production or assembly to take place in their country, sometimes the entire aircraft. But I think more frequently you find component manufacturing, things like that. So since Northrop Grumman sees this Firebird surveillance aircraft as something that would have a lot of appeal across the globe, a lot of international customers, they designed this from the start pretty much as something that's, well, kind of modular, or something that can feature components built by different people in different places. So it's a great concept. I mean, that's something that you need to do if you want to be competitive on a global basis frequently. Even Boeing and Airbus do things like this, as well as many other aircraft makers, where different components are manufactured in different places, and that just helps or facilitates sales in those places. So interesting that Northrop Grumman is doing that here with this Firebird aircraft.
And the Firebird actually was built with open architecture, so you can swap in cockpits and swap out components. And it is a medium altitude, long endurance UAS or manned aircraft. Well, not manned. I don't think you're going to put one pilot in the cockpit for 30 hours at 25,000 feet. But unmanned, it's capable of flying that distance and very flexible on payloads for ISR. So it's a really neat concept to spread technology and keep it monitored as well, because you don't want it falling in the wrong hands. But I'm really pleased with the way Northrop Grumman is doing this. It's just kind of too bad it's kind of an ugly airplane.
So it's not a Piaggio, huh, David?
No, it's not even remotely to Italian design. So, Max, we've got not one, but two videos of the week. The first one comes from Ms. Heather, and it's an absolutely insane drone footage of a tornado that occurred this week. It's funny, we've been talking about flying drones into tornadoes a lot this year, it seems like, but in this case, you get to watch the tornado from the UAS, and it's really kind of a cool video.
It is, and it isn't a gigantically massive tornado, and as the drone follows alongside the tornado, you're not watching houses and buildings being destroyed and trees uprooted and all that. But it is a close-up perspective that you don't normally see. And I don't recall how long the video is, but it follows along the tornado for a couple of minutes anyway, until it kind of eventually sort of dissolves away at the end. But just the sort of the magnificence of the tornado, the maybe even the beauty, you might say, of this tornado, of this wind moving around in this fashion, it's kind of intriguing. It kept me kind of transfixed for the whole video, David.
Oh, I definitely liked it. It's a nice little twister that's sort of meandering around and having a very good time. And yeah, I'm sorry if you're a Twister fan, and it was pointed out to me and reminded to me that it was disappointing to a certain individual because there was no cow flying around in it. But that being said, it's a really neat way to view the phenomena. We have lots of global listeners, and tornadoes are not something a lot of people get to see, but it's definitely worthwhile to take a watch. And of course, we'll have it embedded in our show notes. And the second one is from, I found, believe it or not, on Instagram, and it's from Sean. And you might want to check out his YouTube channel, but Sean flies a 5D wing, and it was, it's just beautiful. I mean, it gets kind of queasy sometimes because he's doing loops and rolls, because this isn't a, it's a different feeling than you would get from a multi-rotor. In this case, it's a fixed wing, but there's some beautiful skies and sunsets and flying over water. What did you think, Max?
Yeah, I thought it was a really different kind of a perspective of beautiful scenery than you would get with a multi-rotor. There are a few aerobatic maneuvers. I think if I was watching it on a larger screen, yeah, I might have got a little queasy at times watching the horizon spin around and so forth. But yeah, it is different. It's well done. I think it's worth watching.
So, Max, you think we should wrap this one up?
I think we will. We want to thank all of you for listening to the UAV Digest. You've been listening to episode 286. As always, find us at the UAVDigest.com. We have show notes there. You'll find links to all the stories, the companies, the videos. If you want to go straight to the show notes for this episode, they're at the UAVDigest.com/286.
And spanning the globe to bring you the constant variety of UASs and drones and feral pigs, you can find us on the World Wide Web at facebook.com, UAV Digest. You can find us on Twitter at UAV Digest. You can find us on LinkedIn, both Max Flight and David Vanderhoof. You can also find us on our Slack listener team, where we really want to find you so we can interact with you. You can do that by sending us a brief email saying you want to be part of the team, and we will send you a password and to get in, and you can chat up and send lots of stories. And of course, if you're on a podcatcher or however you listen to your podcast, send them some feedback so that other people can find us. It's a way that we can expand our reach to other people and bring you even more information later on. So I guess with that, I'm going to say this is David in Fort Washington.
And Max in Hartford.
Thank you for listening.